Welcome to the July 6th edition of the PFF Forecast. I'm George. I'm joined by Eric. As usual, we have a fantastic menu of items today. A menu you might find at like the Cheesecake Factory. Just chock full of goodness. By the way, the Cheesecake Factory announced a new flavor today on July 6th. Was it in honor of Baker Mayfield going to Carolina? Who knows? We will discuss. We might actually talk about the football implications if they exist. And we've got some very cool topics to talk about. We're going to talk about quarterbacks. And a lot of the research that is happening at PFF has been looking at coverage. And in particular, what perfectly covered plays due to an offense, who is facing them the most, who isn't. And there's some really cool things that come out of the data, like why Jimmy G is a G. Maybe not. We'll find out. Plus wide receiver yardage props. And I've heard rumors that we will discuss and go into great detail on Aaron Rodgers' new tattoo and what it means. Let's rock. Alrighty, I'm back in Cincinnati, which is to say I'm back in a sauna. You're not. You are coming to us live from Minnesota. Tell me your reaction when you saw Baker Mayfield is going to Carolina.
I quickly bet. So I had a big position on under for Carolina. And
at what?
Like 5.5. I had it like plus 110. I went and took like basically an alt to like secure a loss. Not a big loss, but just like, I figured that thing. So it's 5.5. I think Mayfield's probably a win and a half better than Darnold. So I quickly got it at a stale book so that I don't really want to be in a position to root against that team winning 6 or more games. Mm-hmm. Like, I think they're going to fight and scrap. Defense is pretty good. Obviously Matt Rhule is, on his way out, but then you do have DJ Moore, who's a good receiver. Robbie Anderson is a good receiver. Obviously McCaffrey's a playmaker and stuff. So like, I just quickly rushed. I don't have a positive opinion about Carolina, but I just don't really want to be that heavily invested in them being terrible, because I don't know if that's possible given the state of the NFC and like, where they are in a last place schedule and things like that.
I think that's right. There are a lot of comments around, Mayfield, Darnold, same difference. They both suck. They both suck, but like the levels of suck, I think, are interesting and worth teasing apart a little bit. Baker has sustained good play for a lot longer periods of time than Sam Darnold has. Here's the question in my mind, which is, can the offensive line hold up in Carolina? Because Baker Mayfield, neither is Sam Darnold, but Baker Mayfield is not necessarily, running around back there saving time. And we've seen how poorly he plays when he's injured. You've got Ikwunu over there at left tackle. He's a rookie. Week one, they play the Browns. That'll be a pretty big matchup advantage for the Browns with Myles Garrett going against Ikwunu, against his old teammate in Baker Mayfield. I have a feeling he will win that matchup. But to your point, Robbie Anderson, DJ Moore, they drafted Terrace Marshall. Now, Terrace Marshall was terrible last year, but he's a young guy, could improve. Christian McCaffrey is a good receiver. So if Ikwunu comes in and is good, you have Moton on the other side at right tackle, who is 21st out of 83 tackles. They're going over 5.5 wins, right? So I think that does make sense. Maybe the price that you would put on Baker Mayfield starting more than a season for the Panthers?
Extremely. I would make it like 4-1.
Okay.
Like,
because what if they win 8 games?
I mean, okay, so I guess the question becomes like, what do they have to do to keep Matt Rhule's job, right? Because there's no way that somebody comes in there. I mean, this is amazing, George. So remember last year when they started 3-0 and then they actually started out pretty good against. I remember
very well. They were, they were playing against the Cowboys.
So get this. So Mayfield's first three games, 8.0 yards per attempt, 8.0 yards per attempt, 8.9 yards per attempt.
Do you mean Darnold or Mayfield?
Sorry, Darnold. And then against Dallas, he was 7.7 yards per attempt. Dude didn't average more than 6 yards a pass attempt the rest of the season. 4.8 against Philly, 5.0 against the Vikings, dog crap, you know, dog bleep defense. 4.5 against our brothers in Christ, the New York Giants. 5.4 against Atlanta. 5.2 against New England. 5.9 against Tampa. 5.1 against New Orleans. And 5.2 against Tampa Bay. Like, that level of putrid quarterback play is easily surpassed by Baker Mayfield. I think that when you look at Baker last season, even like all of his foibles, he didn't average more than 7 yards a pass attempt after week 10, right? But it was at least like, for the season, it was 7.2, which is a good number. It very much trailed off after he got hurt.
Yeah,
against Kansas City week 1, 11.5. Against Houston, 10.1. Chicago, 7.9. You know, in Minnesota, that was a horrendous game, 4.7. But like down the stretch, it was very much like he had deteriorated so much. If he's healthy, like I think this team wins. Like, it's a weird trap, but I think that they, like, let's say they win 8 games. Does Matt Rhule keep his job?
Well, that's the thing. So I think it depends how the 8 games look, to be really clear. I think Tepper is the type of guy that will be looking for a reason either to be positive or to be negative, right? It's going to be one or the other. He's coming out of it going, we're on the way to a Super Bowl with Matt Rhule. And why does he want to do that? Because he hired Matt Rhule. So, but he also does not want to go down with that ship. So he will make, a decision. I think it's more likely than not, obviously, he's gone. To your point about Mayfield, and this is the thing that stuck out to me, you can find this on pff.com. Promo code forecast, by the way. Actually, better even than that, you can get a free subscription by playing $10 at Underdog, promo code PFF. But at pff.com, the quarterback annual, which is a fantastic way to prepare yourself for what these quarterbacks are going to look like next year. Baker Mayfield, this is the thing that stuck out to me. So, you look at his grades year over year, and you remember his rookie year was absolute garbage. And then all of a sudden Freddie Kitchens came along and it was a renaissance. And then it was Freddie Kitchens' year and that was terrible. And then the year after that, it was actually, things are kind of coming around for him. And he played well, had an 86 PFF grade. It was a top 10 graded season. He has two top 10 graded seasons. Last year was a nightmare, 64 PFF grade. But the thing that stuck out to me, the league average quarterback took a sack on under 20%, just under 20% of their dropbacks, pressure dropbacks. Okay, so every time they're under pressure, they're going down about 1 out of 5 of those times. Baker Mayfield took a sack 29% of the time. Okay, so 10% more frequently than any other quarterback. That is that's a 50% increase over the league average. That is bananas. And that should be worrisome because the offensive line is a question mark. But at the same time, he will also have an improved receiving core.
Right.
With DJ Moore and Robbie Anderson, Tommy Tremble's not bad. CMC can catch the ball. So I don't know. There's reason to believe if you want to be positive.
Well, and Mayfield actually, weirdly, if you count playoffs, has averaged 7.2 yards per attempt every single year, which is basically like a little bit above league average. 7.7 as a rookie. The thing that I'll come, you bring up a great point. I think the question becomes how much of that was because of indecision regarding his shoulder, because the first three seasons of his career, he took a sack on 16.2, 20.2, and 17.4% of his pressure dropbacks. Last year was the anomaly, right? Like, it wasn't like when Baker threw the ball.
Are you saying that he took more sacks because his shoulder was hurt? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
I think isn't that 29.1 like an indecision metric? Maybe. Like, he's just simply like not trusting himself. Because when he did throw it was picked off a lot, right? Like,
it was not pretty.
He had 13 interceptions, but like, seven of them in the last three games, including the Green Bay game, he had four. And then that Pittsburgh game was an atrocity with two. you know, the, and the, and a lot more turnover when he plays it, you know, down the stretch there, he had 3, 2, 2, 2, 4, 1 turnover worthy plays. He also had a pass batted down at the line of scrimmage in the last 5 starts of the season. Like, I just think, look, he's not like, we're not trying to make the case, and you know, the comments and everything, we're not trying to make the case that he's good. What I'm making the case is he's better than Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was like otherworldly.
It's not a hard case.
Sure, but I do but think Sam Darnold was otherworldly for like, horrendous.
If you're a Panthers fan,
yeah,
you're here. Are you happy about this? I don't think I am.
No, I mean, the reason I think
I'm
the problem
not happy about it is that you know, they have a better chance of keeping a retread quarterback, right? I mean, what would you put the percent chance that Baker Mayfield ends up becoming a top 10 starter in the NFL? Like 3%, 5%?
Almost, yeah, almost zero. I mean, it's low. And again, like, the other issue with Mayfield is like the upside has a ton of downside, right? Like, mm-hmm. we talked about this with Newton on the New England Patriots last year, which is like, if the guy plays really well, then he's coming back to the counter and asking for a pretty big deal. Like, Mayfield is not, I mean, look at what Carson Wentz commands on the marketplace right now. And Carson mm-hmm. Wentz is a little bit better than Mayfield sometimes, but not, I mean, they're in the same cluster of QBs, right? And, you know, if Mayfield shows you anything, he has that first overall pick, like, you know, feature in his data set. So the next contract is going to be a big one if he shows you anything. So even like the upside has significant downside if you are the Panthers, right?
And so then let me
and that
take
was
you,
true about Darnold, by the way, too, as a third overall pick.
That's fair. Let me take you to my immediate reaction. My immediate reaction was, oh shit, Jimmy G might be playing quarterback for the Niners or on the bench for the Niners next year. You know, I don't know where he would end up going. I don't think it'll be Seattle. Carolina was one of the few places that made sense.
Cleveland.
He's not going to Cleveland. They've got Brissett.
They have Brissett ever been like the answer?
No, but apparently it's the answer for them. I mean, do the Browns have a clue what they're doing? The answer is no.
They took on a significant amount of Mayfield's money, but this is the one year like the Browns like saved themselves for this year, you know, saved themselves as far as cap space. They have the most in the league right now. Effectively, they have 48. I mean, that there is like a Jimmy G sized hole in their roster.
Really,
it's a God-shaped hole in all of us, but there's a Jimmy G-shaped hole in the roster for the Browns.
That would be insane, actually.
I mean, it's a Jimmy G offense, isn't it? Like, it's sort of that, you know, like play action, you know, let's get the ball to David Njoku in space type.
It is, you know. And I think he would do really nice things with Amari Cooper.
Never had an Amari Cooper type, you know, with him.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that does make some sense.
So speaking of our brother in Christ, Jimmy Jesus, we want to talk a little bit about kind of one of the ways that we can look at, you know, quarterbacks is what they're doing within the scheme and the offense that they have, right? And one of the ways to measure that is looking at what we call perfectly covered plays and contextualizing that based on what the quarterback, you know, ends up doing, right? And you would kind of expect, look, the fewer times you have perfectly covered plays, the less frequently you'll throw to contested targets. And you were looking at this data. And so what were kind of the big kind of picture takeaways that you had? What were some of the outlier teams that you saw and what do you make of it?
Yeah, so like for the season, I was putting together my like KPIs so I can go through. And I remember last year, one of my KPIs was like, how often are teams facing contested catches? And it was always funny because you'd see like the Jets were like the team that faced a contested targets third least in the NFL. Bucks, you know, good receiving core, that made sense. Panthers, Raiders. Chiefs were always like they were like better than the next best team by like you know, 2.5% or something like that. And, but then I created this, you know, metric where we were looking at the all coverage data and we had perfectly covered plays. And obviously the flip side of perfectly covered means that like no one got open. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of this other side. And we're very much of the defense, you know, isn't necessarily as important as offense. So perfectly covered is really just like no one got open. And I was noticing like, so when you look at the teams that generated the least amount of perfectly covered plays against, San Francisco is first. You had LA, you know, both of those seem to make sense. The Broncos, the Ravens, the Chargers, the Cleveland Browns, the Buffalo Bills, and, you know, Atlanta were like all like better or comparable to the Kansas City Chiefs. And so I was thinking to myself, okay, if I put this on a graph, can I learn some things about the game? And then, you know, you get that, right? Like, in my opinion, and you can look at my Twitter, it's from yesterday. I said it's a good Mahomes graph. It's a bad Jimmy G graph. It's a good Russell Wilson graph because, you know, but like the Chiefs were like, let's say, you know, top eight, let's say, in, you know, percentage of plays that were perfectly covered against, but they were first in contested targets against, meaning Mahomes, you know, he certainly had receivers to throw to, but he spotted the open guy relatively, you know, high as a function of the propensity of players to get open. Jimmy G, that Niners team was first in generating, you know, not perfectly covered plays by the defensive backfields, but Jimmy G was throwing the ball to contested players more than all but just like a few teams in the league, meaning like Jimmy was just reading the teleprompter. Like there wasn't going to like, oh, this guy's not open, I'm going to throw to the secondary player who's likely open. He was throwing it to the covered guy. Now, is that necessarily bad? Because you look at the Niners and they're like one of the most efficient teams in football, throwing the football. My guess is that it's probably bad, but there's also like a little bit of like, hey, at least he throws to like, you know, the most covered places on the field are also going to be the most valuable as well. So it's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. It is really interesting. And one of the things that I think about kind of immediately, and I'm sure this is what, you know, a lot of people think of too, when they hear this, is like, okay, well, if you throw to a guy who's, you know, perfectly covered, there's a difference between throwing it to, you know, Joe Schmo and throwing it to, I'll give you an example, like a George Kittle, right? Or, you know, we've talked about Debo Samuel, not, you know, not necessarily the greatest receiver on planet Earth. It's a lot of his dual threat that makes him really talented, but he did have some really good receivers. And, you know, the one thing that you can say about Jimmy G is generally he's fairly accurate. He was eighth in the NFL in perfect pass accuracy rate last year. You know, so I don't know. It's interesting. I also think about, you know, just because you are throwing to contested targets more frequently doesn't necessarily mean that you're not throwing to open targets more frequently either. Right. Because, you know, there are guys with steps, you know, step of separation, which not, you know, a step of separation you might classify as, you know, close-ish coverage versus guys that are open. And he threw to, you know, to open players, right about league average. So, you know, I think there's some interesting things to take away from this data, but it's not going to take me off of the Jimmy G bandwagon. If you're trying to do that, it's not going to work.
Yeah. The interesting one. And I agree. I think it's styles of play because like, you know, last year, the Chargers were, I believe, fifth in this metric, you know, percentage of perfectly covered plays against. So guys are getting open for the Chargers, but they were, you know, top three or four team in terms of throwing the ball to covered areas, right? But that's Mike Williams. That's, you know, some of your guys, that's more of their style of play. Like, I don't necessarily know if I'd run an offense like that. Like, I don't want to. You know, Scott Turner, a guy that I praised here, one of the reasons I like the Washington Commanders over. I mean, they were, I think, third worst in the league in terms of perfectly covered plays against me, and their guys weren't getting open. They were also throwing the contested targets at the second highest rate in the league. Mm-hmm. So, you know, does that dampen your thoughts on Wentz a little bit, I think, But also,
it's like, impossible to dampen my thoughts on Wentz.
Well, yeah.
Let's be very clear.
But like Terry McLaurin's a guy who, like, from a stylistic standpoint, is a very good contested catch player. So, you know, you add Jahan Dotson to the mix, and maybe, you know, you add a separator that could really help them. To no one's surprise, the Giants were the second worst team in perfectly covered plays against, because you had Garrett and you had, you know, Freddie Kitchens, and you had, Joe Judge.
My favorite is the Seahawks at the only team above 45% perfectly covered plays against. Right. And the fact that somehow Russell Wilson is basically middle of the pack, like dead center in terms of contested target rate. I actually find this really interesting. So he and Lamar Jackson basically dead even, or he and the Ravens offense basically dead even in terms of percentage of the time at targeting a contested player. But the Ravens had the third fewest perfectly covered dropbacks against and over 10 percentage points less than the league leading Seahawks, which is really interesting. And if I'm then extrapolating this a little bit forward, you know, you look at a team like the Broncos, you know, the Broncos' problem is not players separating or getting open. It's that they didn't have a quarterback to throw them the football. And this speaks, I think, well to, you know, Russell Wilson as a quarterback. What do you make of, you know, the Chiefs are obviously an outlier. Well, not obviously, but they are an outlier here. If you look at it, they are the only team in the NFL throwing to a contested target below 10% of the time. That they are a significant margin below the next closest team, which, by the way, is the Tampa Bay Bucks. And my immediate take is this is not an anomaly. There's something here.
Yeah, I actually think that it's one of Patrick Mahomes' weaknesses as a quarterback. You saw it. This is a very good Patrick Mahomes stat, but it also highlights one of his weaknesses as a player. Mahomes has an absolute cannon for an arm. But I do think that that offense with Reed has elicited so many open receivers that sometimes Mahomes just doesn't gun it into traffic as much as he should. So, you know, with Rodgers, like I think of Rodgers and Mahomes similarly. And like when early in Rodgers' career, you watch him and you're just like, good luck to the league, right? Like they're when he was throwing to the back shoulder of Jordy Nelson, like there was no one that was going to stop that. Right. And Mahomes doesn't throw to he doesn't throw the back shoulder stuff, right? Like I think of the fade to Kelsey against the Bills. Like that was one of like the few red zone fades they like ran all year. You know, he's not like a pinpoint accuracy guy. He's more of a, and we saw this, you know, I think you see this in some of the CPOE stuff that we're talking about. He's more of a engineer throws where the accuracy matters less, you know. And to that, I think this graphic shows that, right? Like he engineers throws where like the guys aren't contested. So then the fact that he's maybe not the most, I hate to say this because I think it's like an absence of evidence of absence type of thing, but he's not like a put it on the correct shoulder guy. He's more of a move around. And like, I think about that Raiders game that you guys did, you and Chris, where he's running to one side of the field and it draws coverage and Kelsey's wide open. And everybody's like, oh, CPOE would say that was an easy throw. And it's like, yeah, like the point is that Patrick is raising the expectation pre-throw. So like, I think of the AFC title game on that third down and we're like, would you just try to fit it into Byron Pringle on that, you know, instead of taking that sack? Like, I think that that's a weakness of Mahomes' game where he just doesn't pick his spots and throw to contested targets enough.
Well, you highlighted one of the problems. You just said the name Byron Pringle. Like, yeah, maybe don't force it into Byron Pringle.
but you know what I'm saying.
I do, but I think this is – I think this is strategic, you know, what the Chiefs are doing here, and I think it makes sense. The data bears this out in multiple ways. He was the best in the NFL last year, again, using the PFF quarterback annual, the best in the league last year at avoiding or not throwing uncatchable passes. He was 30th in the NFL at perfectly accurate pass rate. It not to say that he isn't accurate. He's above average, very, very slightly, just in terms of like overall percentage of throws that are deemed accurate or perfectly accurate. And, you know, but what he does, to your point, is he avoids throwing, I mean, he avoids negatively graded plays, right? We talk about this all the time. He does this so, so incredibly well. And it's not just, you know, generally we think about sacks. I talked about Baker Mayfield earlier, right? You know, he's taking a sack one out of every three times he's pressured, which is, you know, as I said, 10% yeah. above league average. Mahomes was at 13.5%.
Yeah.
You know, it's the things that he does, which are so, you know, just so incredibly smart. And that, to your point, shows up in different ways. And I think here it's like, the work that he's doing is like before the throw, right? It's like, oh, mm-hmm. I'm going to scramble around and I'm going to find an angle so that a guy, if I were in the pocket, Travis Kelce's not open, but I'm outside the pocket. I've rolled around or I've changed my arm angle or I've done this. And now all of a sudden this player is open. And so because I've spent, it's like, you only have so much like perfection in you. He spends right. all of that juice up before the throw and then just worries about making sure it's not uncatchable. And then, you know, and it works. And I wonder how much their new receiving core will benefit that, because you look at not throwing to players who are, you know, maybe a little more contested or, you know, you just kind of try and fit it in there. Have they built a team that supports that? Because Tyreek Hill wasn't that guy, right? I think it makes sense, you know, given the receivers they have. But do they now have a set of receivers, you know, Juju, and you've got MBS, and then you have Sky Moore? Like, is that going to allow him to maybe have a little more of that that gumption, I guess?
Yeah, and you highlighted a great stat, and I think it also shows up in what I would consider to be, you know, 1B of the quarterbacks in the NFL, if you're looking at younger guys. Like last year, so Mahomes 13.4 last year. 2020 was 9.6, which is a crazy number. 2019, 11.6. You look at Josh Allen, you know, and what has made him so great. You know, his first 2 years, he took a sack on 16.3 and 18.9% of pressures, which is like better than league average. But last 2 years, 11.8 and 10.6. Like, to your point, like, pressure does not take these guys down, which is really important. To answer your question, I think that this is going to be a season where, you know, you've had 76 of Mahomes' passes have been dropped the last 2 years. 23 of them have been Tyreek Hill. Like, I think that they're just changing up, Hill's obviously amazing, but he dropped the contested ball against the Bengals that was intercepted in overtime. You know, he had the pick six against the Bills. He had, you know, there was a number of interceptions, you know, to your point, where Mahomes was actually playing pretty well at times last year, and the offense was not being as productive because players weren't taking into account like it was specifically Hill, but even Kelce had drops. You know, he had a drop early in the AFC, second half of the AFC title game that really hurt them. I think when you level out your receiving core and you say, look, like, none of you are the alpha except for Kelce, but none of you wide receivers are the alpha, you can distribute targets based upon who's playing well. And I think that helps their offense be more resilient to slumps. Because when Tyreek Hill was slumping, he was still getting the targets, right? Because of the investment they made and, you know, the number of snaps he plays. And when teams change their defense, they still had to go to Hill. And it just came in the area. It came where he wasn't quite as good, you know, 2.5 yards per ADOT worse, you know, 1.5 yards after the catch worse last year than the year before. And it just, like, whereas when your receiving core is more spread out, then you can, you know, A, do what they're each one of them is good at, and B, you can distribute the ball based upon productivity rather than reputation. And so I think it'll help him a little bit. I think Hill will obviously be a loss, but I think, you know, and you know, I think you make a great point. I think, you know, the limiting negative plays, my hope for them is they have a running back that can catch the ball out of the backfield, a la what Brady had in James White and guys like that, where and to a, like, how much he prefers Leonard Fournette now, where a guy where he does all of those great things, right? He engineers a great play and it's still not open. he can just dump it off to the back the same way. You look at the Super Bowls where like Shane Vereen had 11 catches or so against the Seahawks defense when they won that Super Bowl. James White had what, like 15 catches against the Falcons. Like there's that sort of like down payment of that running back that I think the team has missed for, you know, basically since Kareem Hunt left.
A great way to transition. We're going to talk wide receiver yardage props in just a second. Before we do, I've mentioned this at the top, but just another reminder that fantasy season is upon us. It is July. So you're like, I don't know, 6-8 weeks before your draft. It's time to get rolling. And the best way to do that is at Underdog Fantasy. You can play in their best ball mania tournament. Sorry, I can't read. And you can do so for a chance at part of that $10 million prize. Best part is all you have to do is draft. So you go and you draft, and then you don't have to worry about starting who this player or this player. There's no waivers, no trades, none of that in-season management BS. The best scores at each position play each week and count towards your score. And that's how a champion is determined. Go use promo code PFF and they'll double your first deposit up to $100. And when you play $10 with promo code PFF, you will get a free PFF subscription. So I have no idea what you're waiting for. Go make it happen. Underdogfantasy.com or the Underdog Fantasy app. All righty. We're looking at over-unders at totals for regular season receiving yards. We talked about these for some rookies a few podcasts ago. I maintain my love for Sky Moore over 680 and a half receiving yards. What are some of the receiving yards props that you like?
Well, I think there are some that would surprise people, right? So here are a couple that have surprised me in this round. Davante Adams, over under is 115, both sides, 1,200 and a half receiving yards. I feel like if you're the Raiders and you get that number, you're disappointed, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends.
Nearly a 1,200 yard receiver.
I think it depends how it looks, you know, but like, yeah, certainly.
Yeah. And so another wide receiver that was traded for a bounty this offseason, Tyreek Hill. And this is actually shaded under 1,025 and a half receiving yards. So less than 1,100 yards receiving. If you're the Dolphins and you get less than this number, you're disappointed. Yeah.
Yeah. So I saw that one too. And my reaction was, if that's trending towards happening, then Tua's hitting the bench. Right?
Yeah. These people, the Tuanon people are really like, you know, they're coming out in fear, but like, I always like to look at these markets and say like, is this your king? But here's a couple others that I'm really interested in. So Terry McLaurin is 1,500 yards, which is interesting to me. I also think that Michael Thomas at 800 and a half yards is one that I find interesting as well. Kyle Pitts at 900 and a half yards. And then lastly, this one's big, and I'm interested in your take on this. Justin Jefferson, 1,350 and a half yards.
Yeah. It's big. I'm going over on Justin Jefferson. I think the dude lights the world on fire this year with an offense that wants to throw the ball. I do. They're going to be in some high scoring games. Not like that defense is any good. Look, they hired Kevin O'Connell to make the passing offense great again. That's what they did.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, we have him on pff.com projected for well over 1,500 yards, just under 1,600. Yeah. Like, I saw this and I was like, still too low. Another guy that I feel is still too low is CeeDee Lamb. Guy that is going to just munch in terms of how many targets he's going to get. Was already Dak Prescott's favorite guy last year, 1,175 and a half. We have him projected at 1,300. So that's one that I like as well, that has a high, higher total. Here's one that I like that has a slightly lower total, and that's Gabriel Davis, 875 and a half. Now,
Davis is like your Tyler Boyd for
maybe it's because I've watched that Chiefs game so many times and the dude is just, I mean, he's making Kansas City barbecue on the football field. Yeah. But I think he's really good. And that Bills team is going to be, you know, the Bills are going to try and win the Super Bowl in the regular season. Right? There's no mm-hmm. doubt about it. Why do I say that? You've mentioned this multiple times. The Bills have a great home field advantage. It's freezing. They have the highest average starting game wind speed. It is a big advantage. Where did they play last year? You know, it's that simple. Like they are going to want to play at home, and they're going to go out and try and win this. We have Gabriel Davis projected 1,100 yards. So, you know, I am a Gabriel Davis supporter, but the data would back me up here. Gabriel Davis had just as good a PFF grade as Stephon Diggs last year. And if you go watch him, I think you can see why.
He was worth like a third of a win or so. Like, he was a very good football player, even just with lower volume. I think you're right, though, by the way. Like, what you want in these season, you know, prop markets, if you're going to bet over, you're going to – so one of the things I want to talk about is, like, separation and stuff. You want separators, right? Like, mm-hmm. I fell into the Kenny Golladay trap a couple of years, you know, like that. That's certainly, you know, the last few years I bet Golladay overs, and I did not think that they – you know, they ultimately didn't cash. I think that type of receiver is going to be rough. You know, that's why Jefferson's so good and you know, because he just gets open and it makes it easier on the receivers or on the quarterback. I'm sorry. But the reason that I like what you're saying here is, to your point, the Bills are going to try to win the AFC one seed in the first 8 weeks of the season, right? When they look at, okay, what's the difference between us and a Super Bowl? It's like, we had to go to Kansas City both years, right? Mm-hmm. We had to, you know, we put our fate in home field advantage's hands in the wrong way, right? Mm-hmm. They have not lost a home playoff game. They've won 3 playoff games the last 2 years, all at home, right? They're mm-hmm. a good football team. And they probably think, if we can get home field advantage in this really difficult conference, we can ultimately win this whole thing. And to me, that's going to be them pumping targets to Diggs and Gabriel Davis in the first half of the year when the weather is good, meaning that those numbers are going to be astronomical. Whereas mm-hmm. last year, it was sort of this, you know, and they weren't bad in the first half of the year, but it was very like underwhelming in the first half of the year for them, in large mm-hmm. part because they fell into what I call like Raven syndrome, which is like, you know, you face the Chiefs early in the year, you either beat them or you don't, but then like your motivation goes down in the second half of the year because what else is there left to win? We got to wait until January to actually get what we really want out of this season. You know what I mean? And so I think that the opposite approach is going to happen this year, because they did that last year and they kind of messed around. They would go and lose to Jacksonville, and, you know, they struggle bus against, you know, a bunch of teams and stuff. And then it's like, I think this year is going to be the exact opposite. I think this year they're going to try to tear the cover off of the league in the first half of the year. And that bodes well, because what you want is Davis and Diggs and stuff like that to have, you know, to be at 1,000 yards by like week 10, so that you're not worried about these props in the second half of the year.
No, that's a good point. I have one question for you. So you cited something that I thought was really cool, and you put this in our show notes, and guy who does some really, really great work is Matt Harmon of Reception Perception. Go check his work out. I believe it's just receptionperception.com. You can find him on Twitter. You then, you know, taking some of that data and looking at, you know, how good is someone at beating man coverage? And that, we talk about this all the time. Like, some stats are cool and that's great, but the stats you're looking for are the ones that are cool and also are predictive of what might happen in the next year, right? They're sticky. And success rate versus man coverage, unsurprisingly, is sticky. Now, like, I don't think you needed, you know, you didn't need math to believe this, right? But it's nice validation of that point, which is, what do you want? Well, I want to look at a player last year, say, did he do well? And then have some confidence he's going to do well again last year. When I looked at Gabriel Davis last year, I saw the guy turning corners into pretzels. You know, success rate versus man coverage, being shifty, being able to get open, is something that is very sticky year to year. And so my question to you would be, who are you fading as a result of that, if anyone? Like, we've talked about a bunch of overs. Is there anybody you know, is there a Kenny Golladay out there this year that you're saying, oh, I'm going under that person?
Yeah, it's not. So, yeah, for sure. So, and the thing that I think there's the coolest about this is like how to play defense. So one of the things that, and he does success rate. Now he does like a sampling procedure, basically, you know, so he doesn't look at everybody's route, and like with our all coverage stuff, I think we're going to be able to derive this ourselves for every player. But, you know, what he does is he looks at, you know, basically rate of double teams and also like percentage of, you know, times that sort of a player gets open against man and zone. And what's really interesting is the percentage that a player gets open against zone is basically noise year to year. And so, you know, I think if I'm an opposing defense, I essentially, if I'm overmatched in coverage, I just play zone, right? Cause I'm going to basically like limit the difference between you and, you know, my team. So I always think of the Ravens, where the Ravens played really good man coverage, but then they face a team that was better than them. And it would exacerbate that difference. Like Kansas City would play them and just fillet them. But they'd play against like bad teams and then they would be really good defensively. So I think of like, okay, who's good against man coverage? And then who's not good against man coverage? And to me, I would say, you know, like guys that are aging. So I look at Adam Thielen here, 750.5 yards receiving, like his yards per route run has gone down, like, you know, a substantial amount, like half a yard or so over the last few years. Right. So this is a guy that like is increasingly not getting open to get the targets. Right. And you look at his NGS stuff, that's going down. So that's a player that I'm not going to buy into quite as much, you know, because of the style of play, but also getting older and sort of inferring from that, that he's not necessarily getting open as much. Another one, and I have to look at sort of the actual, but like, I think a guy like Chase Claypool, who's more of a moss type, you know, guy is trying to moss people, his total 725.5. Like that's another one where I'm a little bit nervous about, you know, I'm a little bit nervous about his ability to, you know, get open in some of these situations. So those are just a couple, but I would say like my basic orientation is more towards guys who can get open, the Jerry Judy's and the, you know, the CeeDee Lambs and guys like that. Yeah. And away from those that need, you know, sort of the contested target stuff to really, you know, make way in this league.
Concur. By the way, promo code forecast, 25% off any PFF subscription. A ton of the stuff that we have talked about and use every single podcast you can find at pff.com. Get all of unlocked content, all the different fantasy and betting tools that we use, plus all the grades and data to make your football season the best it can possibly be. Recommendations time. I believe you have a recommendation in here. So why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, I've been reading a book called Do Hard Things by Steve Magnus. It's a very good book. Magnus is a runner and a running coach. He's also like a fairly, like, I think it's very cool. Like I've been sending you quotes from it all week. So it's a good, both for like management, but also just like your own individual sort of, you know, orientation towards the world. I think it's a good book.
I'm with you there. I have two recommendations for the people. The good people. Well, actually, you know what? I'm gonna add some more. So my first recommendation, I was in Northern California for the last week, and I went to some good restaurants. I'll give some out if anyone is there. The best Indian food that I have found, actually, I think like in the United States. Now, granted, I haven't tried every place, but like I've lived in a few different places. I've sampled. A place called Darbar. It's in Palo Alto. It's incredible. And it's, you know, I recommend going and sitting down. Very, very, very good. Another place that just opened up in Menlo Park, which is where I'm from, is a little sushi joint called Kyosho Sushi on Santa Cruz Avenue. You got to go early. I went there last night. They're like closing up at like 8:30, like waiting for us to get out. But as far as like takeout goes, fantastic. And then recommendation for that's not food related is I just switched to a new, this is gonna sound weird, but I just switched to a new search browser. or like not browser, but like a search engine is the right term, called Neeva. And I was just getting fed up with every time I Google search something. This happened to me because I was looking for shoes. I recommended those shoes, by the way, still a huge recommendation, called Zero HFS. They're awesome. But when I did that, I got like 20 sponsored things in my search results before I found anything that wasn't sponsored. And I was like, this is just garbage. And so I did a little bit of research, and there's a company called Neeva that was actually started by people from Google. And their whole thing is they do no sponsored stuff. They don't, you know, they don't like sell your data to people. You can log in, sign, you know, you can create an account. They'll use your, you know, preferences and search results to help curate things for you, but they make money with a subscription service. It's not, and there is a free option as well. So a recommendation for people that are sick and tired of being sold a bunch of garbage on Google.
Dude, I on what day was it? So some people watch fireworks on 4th of July. I literally went through all of my subscriptions. So like Patreon,
nice,
you know, whatever. And I like deleted like probably, God, what ended up being like $150 worth of stuff every single month that I wasn't using. To your point, like I had just been indiscriminately like signing up for stuff. And not that like I need, you know, I just wanted to like stop getting these emails, frankly. And like, it was very liberating. Very liberating. You know, you sort of, you strip things down to their essence. And, you know, by the way, what do you get when you go to an Indian restaurant? Because I try not, I eat it once a month because I'm trying to thin out a little bit, but like chicken tikka masala is maybe my favorite dish of anything in the world.
I'm a big chicken tikka fan. So that's one of the things I always order there. I'll say the other things that I generally really like. I like lamb quite a bit. So lamb biryani is one of my favorite things. I really like samosas. I actually like a lot of the vegetable dishes as well. Vindaloo is generally pretty spicy, and I like spicy things. So, you know, lamb vindaloo is something I get. And another thing that I get is the tandoori shrimp, which I like quite a bit. I think shrimp and Indian spices go really, really well. So those are the things I get. Also, of course, if you're going to an Indian restaurant, it's a good Indian restaurant, get a mango lassi. It's instead of dessert, they're delicious and you will thank me later. So there you go.
Boom.
That's our show. Come back next time for more food recommendations. We love you. Thank you so much for hanging out, and we'll see you on Sunday. Peace.